Hey everyone, welcome back to the Atlanta Startup Podcast. My name is William Leonard, your host for today, and we're in for a great conversation, I'll say, with Blaine Davis, who's a partner at Outlander VC. Blaine, finally, we're able to do this, man.
Glad we're finally doing it. Thanks for having me, William. It's been a minute.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, over our coffee chats over this year, we've been talking about getting this on the calendar, and now I'm glad we're able to finally make it happen. But let's kick the conversation off with, you know, just a high level overview of Outlander and the thesis you all have at the firm. Like, tell us what gets you excited when it comes to backing innovative startups.
Absolutely. So here at Outlander, we're fundamentally first check investors. So really, really early stage in the truest meaning of it. We're a generalist fund and we lead pre-seed rounds. And our process, being as early as we invest, is, you know, our process and thesis is really based on investing in people. So, you know, we've backed a handful of unicorn companies across our first few funds. We're investing out of our third fund right now. And our biggest differentiator is, like I said, it's all about the people for us. We have a founder framework, proprietary founder framework that drives our decision-making process, takes something that's traditionally opaque, evaluating people, make it quantifiable. This allows us to invest very early, get to conviction before a lot of other funds would get to conviction. We invest sometimes even at the idea stage or the MVP, as long as it's the right team. We're all about team dynamics, founder market fit, and just the human element. We like to bring the human element to this industry.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that aspect of how you all build conviction a little bit later on in the conversation, but it's good to know. And I love that you all are, you know, this pre-seed focus here. What is your background? How did you land at Outlander? I know you've been in the investment space for some time, you know, ran some great programs up at Vandy, but how did you get connected with the Outlander team?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a long, long winding story. I feel like a lot of us in this industry have, you know, a ton of different backgrounds and journeys to the space. You know, I'll take it way back. Former college athlete. First part of my career was primarily in product in fintech in New York. And I went back to business school to get over to the investing side of things and make that pivot. Wasn't really sure what stage I wanted to invest at, but, you know, had a couple road bumps in the road and around business school, and wanted to really focus my career around impact. How can I touch as many people as possible, really make a change in the industry, in the investing space? And that drove me to focus on that early stage. So I was laser focused when I was at Vandy, getting my MBA and networking and joining a top tier fund as early as possible. So, you know, spoke with a lot of funds, a lot of top funds, and just had a great values alignment with Outlander. I've always looked at myself as a true extrovert, big people person. As you know, how many coffee chats have we had and just sat there for hours just chatting. I'm all about that. So I think the people thesis really brought me here. And I've been here through kind of that deployment of our second fund. And then, you know, now we're investing out of our third fund. So really values alignment on the team, came here to Atlanta. We're a remote first fund, so we're kind of scattered throughout the US. There's seven of us on the team. But there's a big contingent of us here in Atlanta. So that's how I ended up here. And part of the reason for joining and part of the reason that what we're doing here aligns so much with my values is, you know, our thesis, we really like to invest outside of those typical cities. So, you know, San Francisco, New York, I think there's value there, but we found a lot of alpha in markets like Atlanta. You know, I've invested in companies in Atlanta and Portland, Maine, and Boulder, Colorado, all around. I think there's a lot of interesting tailwinds that we're all about post-COVID, just shifting to this kind of remote first world.
I can totally agree with that. There is, I believe, going to be a new wave of value creation from startups that are built between the coasts. And it's good to see that there are a lot more VCs kind of building a thesis around that, where there's just been so much capital sort of congested on the coast that, you know, there's plenty of untapped value that sits in the middle of the country, in the Southeast, Midwest. But that's awesome, man. That's a great background. I want to dive into how you all think about building conviction at this pre-seed stage, right? You mentioned maybe you're even investing when there's just an idea and there's maybe not even a product build, and you all are really indexing on the people in the team here. How do you all do that? I know you have a proprietary founder framework, but maybe you can just share some high level of how you all think about conviction building at pre-seed.
Yeah, absolutely. So that founder framework I mentioned before, I'll touch on that again. But our managing partner, Paige, was in the intelligence community for a while. And we've sort of based our investing thesis in people off of how this character attributes training that they do in the intelligence community. So there's elements of that in what we do. And just over the years, it's kind of shifted to us seeking out these different founder archetypes in various geographies. And that's kind of how we get to conviction. So it's a lot of it's around the people. Of course, we do a ton of diligence on the business model and, you know, market sizing and all that. But I think there's a lot of funds out there that say they invest founder first. And, you know, what does that really mean? I think everybody cares about the people, but, you know, this founder framework, 38 character attributes. That's how we break it down. And we analyze each and every team, each and every founder that we speak with on this. And that's how we get to conviction. So I think, you know, high level, it rolls up to a few different categories: vision, intelligence, character, and execution, which might seem simple on the surface, but I think a lot of what we do and what we look at are less obvious. So, you know, vision is not just product vision in the simplest form. It's, you know, being customer obsessed, owning your brand. Intelligence is not just IQ and EQ. It's being a quick learner. We like to support that. Character, we invest in leaders. Like I mentioned before, I'm a former athlete. We're a full team of former athletes and veterans too. So we've got some bias towards investing in that type of leader. And then execution, we look for people that want to move quick. I think in this industry, you need to grow your company really quick. We look for speed. We look for focus. And that's a lot of how we get to conviction.
You mentioned, you know, this 38 attribute framework here. You know, what are some of the favorite attributes of founders that you've backed that you're just like, I want to see this in almost every founder that I'm backing? Or it's similar traits that you've seen in successful founders that you've backed, whether it be grit, tenacity, you know, able to sell the product, just an outlandish, like crazy vision that they can execute on. What are some of those attributes that personally resonate with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a fun one. There's a few of them, right? So 38, I think I love to see a founder that's truly customer obsessed. So not just, oh, I've done a bunch of research on the space, chatted with a few people. I tend to gravitate towards the founders that, you know, have spoken to couple hundred different customers before writing a single line of code, right? I think that obsession with the space and really uncovering those true pain points is exciting to me. And I know we've talked about that before too. I know you're a big fan of that one. Also, under that kind of character bucket, I like, you know, risk takers, like people who are courageous. Those are two main factors that I consider. I think it takes a lot to take the jump to be a founder. Everybody knows that, right? It is a big risk to take, but I think people who are in a great place in their career, have done extremely well, there a lot of factors can go into just how much of a risk you're taking and just how much you're betting on yourself. And I love to see that self-confidence in the folks that I back. Those are just a few of them. I think, you know, I think there's a lot more we could go into, but, you know, I think the 38 points allows us to, each and every person on our team has a different kind of archetype that they, mm-hmm. that they like to back. And, you know, we all analyze each founder that we invest in. Everybody runs the founder framework against it. So it becomes a great process to see.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I want to shift the conversation here a bit more, right? Because building conviction at pre-seed is such a unique exercise that really accelerates specific market or regional growth, right? I think one of the reasons that San Fran and New York were so have been so successful for so long is because they've had that foundational pre-seed capital there for so long. And in markets like Atlanta, you and a couple of others, I think Overline and some of those funds are kind of filling that glaring gap at pre-seed here in Atlanta and really in cities and regions between the coast. So would love for you to speak to the importance of what pre-seed capital means to a burgeoning ecosystem like Atlanta or a Boulder, Colorado, or like a Nashville, cities like that.
Absolutely. It means so much, right? I think I'll take it a step back before I answer that too. So I think one of our other differentiators here at Outlander is our deal flow, right? I think any early stage VC, any VC will tell you how important proprietary deal flow is, but what does that really mean? What we realized is to have as large of a top of funnel that you can have and as differentiated is so important to success. I think we talked about it in, you know, ton of concentration in San Francisco, Silicon Valley, ton of concentration in New York, might even throw Boston and LA into that mix. But I think being able to become a destination for founders in those underrepresented cities, just under networked founders is one of our biggest focuses. I think, after COVID, so many people are staying in their cities that they start building in and not moving towards those hubs, which they traditionally used to. I think there's some statistic like 50% fewer companies at the Series A and B and beyond, where it was, you generally raise a larger round like that, and then there's pressure to move to wherever your investor is in those larger hubs. That's not happening these days, right? So it's even more important to get in early in those ecosystems and continue for the companies in an Atlanta, in a Chicago, an Austin, what have you. So that's a long-winded way to get to why pre-seed in Atlanta and the importance of it. But it's not easy building a venture scale business. I think it takes capital to grow. And at the early stage, it takes a lot of capital to find that product market fit, right? So we kind of fill that gap of really growing what used to be known as a friends and family round and institutionalizing it. And I think that can take that process of finding founder market fit. If you were just bootstrapping or raised a little bit of money, it could take a few years to find product market fit. And by institutionalizing the pre-seed and investing at that stage, it can take that couple year process and shrink it down to a few months, right? Which just makes growth so much quicker. So I think doing that in these smaller cities has just built the ecosystems like crazy. It lowers the barrier to entry. It allows folks to realize that they can achieve that growth earlier. And we're trying to take that nationwide. I think that's been around for a while in Silicon Valley, and it's the access in all these other cities is really important.
Yeah. I think the broader thesis of trying to institutionalize the family and friends or pre-seed round is only going to pay dividends for the city or region that this is now occurring in, because you have so much more innovation that's happening. You have people, you're encouraging people to build in that region now. Like you said, people were, building here, but realizing that they couldn't fundraise, get an investor from the Bay, take their company out to San Francisco or New York or LA or whatever it may be. So it's good that we're seeing more pre-seed.
We want them to stay, right?
Exactly. I think, we're seeing companies now that are built in Atlanta. They get funded with pre-seed capital in Atlanta. They find a seed investor in Atlanta. They find their Series A here. And then maybe they go out to New York or the Bay for growth capital as well. But I think the more that we can have companies be foundationally built here from pre-seed to Series A and B, it's just kind of like this evolving flywheel for the ecosystem here. And I know you all have an interesting pre-seed company here in Atlanta that you all bagged. I think it may be seed now, eSquad, but tell us about eSquad and what they're doing and how you all sort of built conviction around them and their round.
Yeah, absolutely. eSquad, super exciting investment of ours. We made just a little under a year ago. And I've joined the board, worked very closely with the founder, Max. And what's interesting about them is they were kind of spread across two cities, both, you know, not your tier one typical venture cities, Atlanta and also Portland, Maine. So just another example of a great place where, you know, these cities, I think there's a ton of hidden gems. We were able to find eSquad very early, just coming out of Techstars, actually. And we were the first institutional investor there, and have supported them since. I think Max is a great example of that, you know, some of those traits in the founder framework that I spoke to earlier, that are some of my favorites, right? Customer obsessed. Knows it's a vertical SaaS platform for field operations, so mining, forestry, fisheries, etc. And he knows the space more than any other. He's a third generation field worker. He's also an immigrant from Chile, and it's just been great working with that team. I think that's a perfect example of a company that can grow and thrive in an ecosystem like Atlanta. Atlanta has a high concentration of their end customers, of forestry customers, and he's been able to land a ton of contracts here and has no intention of leaving the Atlanta ecosystem, which we're excited about.
Yeah, now you mentioned something interesting there, right? Companies that build in a particular city that have a high concentration of their end customer there, right? Like, for instance, how should founders think about that, right? Because let's say you're building software for forestry or whatever it may be, but you're in Texas, or like you're in, you know, New York City. Like, how does a founder think about getting close to the customer, but kind of maintaining a base and a team, maybe in a differentiated geography? Or should they be, you know, in the same city as their customer or customer base as they're thinking about evolving the company from pre-seed idea phase to MVP to now early signs of product market fit? How do you all think about geography for those companies?
I'm going to give you a terrible answer, which is it depends, right? I think it really depends. You know, we truly do believe that so much business can be done virtually in these post-COVID days. I mean, we're 90% of the companies we invested in out of our second fund, we never met face-to-face prior to writing the check. So I think from that standpoint, I think, you know, you can be anywhere within reason and do very well in terms of selling as an early stage company. But for some of those more old school industries like forestry or fisheries or mining, it's helpful to be there and be in person, and still a lot of handshake deals. So sometimes like that, we encourage it. And that's definitely a focus area for us too. We love vertical B2B SaaS in some of these more old school industries. I think there's a lot of opportunity there for tech advancement. But you know, I think we'll never tell a founder to move anywhere, but I think, you know, some people gravitate towards those hubs, and certainly, I don't think there's that much commercial fishing in Texas. So that would be a tough one. Right.
Right. No, I think that's interesting. I've seen a few funds pop up with the thesis of bringing or investing in companies that are bringing offline industries kind of online with technology. So I think that's an interesting thesis to think about and watch over the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years or so. And
yeah, we love that space, especially with AI. It's like a very practical application of AI technology these days, and just, you know, bringing automation to some of these older industries and just making driving efficiencies that way. I think anytime you can replace pen and paper with a very easy to use system, low cost, easy to use, easy to bring a lot of users onto the platform, it's an exciting space.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned that you're on the board of eSquad. I would love for you to share just perspective of building a board at this early, early stage of the company, right? Because one, from your perspective, you're on the board of this pre-seed seed company that is probably experiencing early revenue momentum. So maybe you can unpack some of the board dynamics for some of the early stage founders that are listening to our conversation today, to kind of know maybe some first principle thoughts around just general board hygiene at the seed or early stage.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great topic. I think taking a step back, right? We hear, and a lot of my founder friends that are very early stage, it might be intimidating of the thought of having a board, right? And really kind of institutionalizing and making, you know, more corporate, an early stage startup, right? But we don't think about it in that way. And I think it's important to kind of take away that notion. We take board seats in a lot of our companies when it's appropriate, not each and every investment we take in. And we take some observer, some board seats, and we think it's a huge advantage for the companies and for us, you know, to get in the habit of doing these proper board meetings. I think there's the notion that there's no need for a board before the Series A, and then the Series A, you know, that's always where a board's established and becomes more formal. But we think, why not be prepared earlier? It's going to happen. It can only help as you get further down the line. So I think we think about establishing the board as, you know, setting a cadence, holding companies accountable, which we do at all times with our portfolio companies. But if you can structure it, quarterly goals, retrospective on those goals, how can we be more productive going forward and just get a lot of different perspectives in the room? It's a great use of a board. Again, yeah, making it a habit. It's going to happen at the Series A. And then, you know, it helps to kind of stabilize or bring structure to something that's, you know, tends to be frantic, right? I think there's a founders are moving quick. It always feels like juggling a million things at once. And we as investors tend to not take a step back and look from a higher level unless we put structure to it, right? Put a board meeting on the calendar. It doesn't need to be stuffy, and get into that good habit. And that's how we look at it. And it's been a pleasure being on the eSquad board. And yeah, I would recommend most founders to set it up at the seed stage.
Yep. That's, you know, as Valor, we have the thesis of leading seed rounds, and we take boards at, you know, we take a board seat when we do lead that seed round, and it creates structure, formality, and really helps the company accelerate into that Series A. And when now as a founder, you get to the Series A and you have a more formalized, a larger board, you understand the dynamics of how board meetings go. You understand, you know, the cadence of board meetings and sending out board materials, et cetera, et cetera. And you kind of walk into that with some skin in the game already. So I love your insights there, Blaine. As we...
It's only going to make you look better, right? I think what do they say in the corporate world? It's dress for and do the job that you want to be doing. So run the Series A processes as a seed company. It's only going to make you look better and throw less new elements in when you get to the next stage.
Right. As we wrap up the conversation here, Blaine, I know you and the team are pretty generalists when it comes to making investments. You know, you like vertical SaaS, you know, industries that are offline, technology that's bringing them back online. You know, what are you and the team excited about when it comes to 2024? And do you have any specific focus areas that you're digging into now or plan to dig into over the next, you know, 12, 24 months or so?
Yeah. So you mentioned it. We love vertical SaaS for old school industries. We've been investing in AI for about a decade. So we look practical, applications that are vertical specific for AI. We love the future of workspace. I think we've mentioned it a few times tangentially, but the workspace is shifting ever since COVID, and we imagine that there's going to be more exciting technologies in the next few years as well. And lastly, low-cost robotics while paired with AI. So we invest in low-cost robotics as long as there's a strong software element as well.
Cool. Low-cost robotics. I have to dig into that some more. That's awesome, man. No, Blaine, this has been a great conversation. We have a lot of early stage founders, often idea stage, who listen to our podcast. What is the best way for them to potentially pitch or get in front of you or someone at the Outlander team?
Yeah, I would love to speak with anybody who this conversation's resonated with. Our website is outlander.vc, and there should be right at the top right, I believe, on the website, there's a form for submission of decks. So we can, we speak with each and every one of our cold inbound leads. So, go to the website, reach out. We will get back to you. We value that so much. I'd love to chat and look forward to it.
Awesome. Blaine, thanks for the time, man.
Thanks, William. This was great. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for being a part of the community of Courage by listening to the visionary founders and investors on the Atlanta Startup Podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss a single episode of the over 200 investors and founders sharing their insider tips and secrets to growth. Our regular listeners tell us we're the briefing room for the innovation economy in the fastest growing region of the country, the South, and when you subscribe, you become part of the inside circle. The Atlanta Startup Podcast is proudly hosted by Valor VC. Valor is a venture capital firm that leads seed rounds in AI and B2B SaaS startups. If you like the podcast, check out more of Valor's programs for courageous founders and investors, like Startup Runway. Over $100 million in early-stage venture capital is catalyzed through Startup Runway's grant-making program for pre-seed startups. Go to startuprunway.org to learn more and apply directly for non-dilutive capital. Valor celebrates VC Day, the largest early-stage private capital conference in the region, at the end of the year. Top founders, leading VCs, endowments, and family offices attend. Learn more at vc.day. At Valor, courage is the currency of innovation and the heartbeat of our culture. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.